Welcome to episode 241 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G and 6G. Cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started, but before we do, I have some news to share. After 9 years with More Insights and Strategy, I've decided to strike out on my own in the new year. It's been a great run, and our podcast, unfortunately, is going to be coming to an end. But I'll share more details soon about my new adventure, so stay tuned to that. And with that, let's get started with my first topic. And I want to talk about Verizon. And Anshul, recently Verizon issued some pretty deep price cuts. This applies to its Unlimited Ultra, Unlimited Plus, and Unlimited Welcome plans, where subscribers can lock in for 3 years. And by many measures, these are some of the most aggressive rate plans available out there. There's a lot of concern, including from myself, that this could spark a price war. And is this really what Verizon's new CEO should have done as his first move? I know you're going to talk about something they're doing for enterprise and FWA, but what do you think about this pretty aggressive move? They're typically not the low-cost leader, are they?
Yeah, I think this is a consequence of them not being the market leader they once were.
Yeah.
And them wanting to find growth and maybe increase some of their competitors' churn. And I think we're in a place where everyone's essentially battling for the same market share. And yeah, price is a great way to do that. If Verizon believes that they can do it and that their investors won't balk at this, then by all means, I think it would be very interesting because let's be honest, T-Mobile started kind of their growth with a price war. In the end, consumers win. And I can't really see it as a bad thing. But it really comes down to whether or not investors will allow this to sustain itself.
Yeah, Verizon's ARPU was already under tremendous pressure. They've been shedding subscribers left and right. And that's based on the fact that they've really been in last place with respect to delivering, from my perspective, 5G standalone. It's interesting how this will affect the bottom line. And it's one thing to claw back customers, but if you don't do it profitably, I don't know, it could be a challenge to your point. So it'll be interesting to watch this and see how it rolls out. Hey, but let's go to your first topic. You want to talk about Ookla and something about cellular is better than Wi-Fi in airports?
Yeah, so Ookla did a report where they compared cellular carriers to Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And they did this at major airports in the country. So they had, let's say, at Midway International in Chicago, AT&T had almost a gig, while the airport had 120 megabits per second. John Wayne in Orange County, 711 megs on AT&T, 115 over Wi-Fi. They were showing the top five and bottom five for mobile versus Wi-Fi. They did have some occasions where Wi-Fi was faster than 5G, like in George Bush, in Orlando, at DFW, at least on AT&T. But they also showed Verizon, they showed T-Mobile, and yeah, in a lot of cases, 5G at airports is better than Wi-Fi. There's also plenty of cases where it's worse, but they also showed arrivals, and also they showed different carriers' performance in different airports, and they showed that T-Mobile and Verizon are tied, while AT&T lags a bit. And then they also showed where the mobile providers win and then where they lose. And how many airports it is. So in most cases, they win. And they even have the color-coded chart on their website. So if you go to the Ookla website, you can find this. The article is called Cellular Faster Than Wi-Fi in U.S. Airports. Yeah. And yeah, it's very interesting to see that there's very specific airports that are problematic. And then there's certain carriers that are just better overall. But it was really interesting that all three carriers were better than the Wi-Fi and George Bush Airport, for example, except for AT&T. It's just, we live this every day, and it's very interesting that, like, they even compared, like, Wi-Fi 5, Wi-Fi 6E, Wi-Fi 7. Unsurprisingly, Wi-Fi 7 is non-existent in top U.S. airports.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Wi-Fi 5, which is probably one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
And about 25% is Wi-Fi 6, just Wi-Fi 6. At the top airports, global, across the U.S., it's almost 50%. But it definitely seems like there's a modernization that needs to occur, which might have been the incentive for Ookla to do this. But it's really interesting data. I love data. And yeah, I just think that we're in a place where Wi-Fi need to improve in places that are venues, and we're about to be on Wi-Fi 8.
Yeah, I think it's a function of two things. Number one, you highlighted the age of the infrastructure. My assumption, and it sounds like you've confirmed it, is that there's a lot of older, I don't want to call it legacy Wi-Fi infrastructure, but it's quite a few generations old. And I would say the second challenge is lack of densification. What's happening with this older infrastructure? Because I experience it, you experience it, because I traveled 500,000 miles this year and I still have a few more to go. It's just not properly, the access points aren't properly scoped to handle the number of people that are required. And then you've got older infrastructure, and it just makes for a terrible Wi-Fi experience. Other than like when I'm able to get into an American Airlines lounge, yeah, I'm on my smartphone. I'm not even trying to pull my notebook out unless it's critical. Yeah,
unless you have a 5G notebook.
Yeah, there you go. I need a 5G notebook. Yeah, I hope this really provides an impetus to airports that are modernizing, especially like my airport that's going through a major renovation. Let's factor in the guest Wi-Fi as well, not just for back office operations and that sort of thing, but actually for passengers as well. I think it'd be a great idea.
I was just there. I saw the construction happening in the middle of the airport. It's definitely a lot going on. And we just got a new airport terminal in San Diego.
Yeah.
And I actually haven't used the Wi-Fi yet, now that I think about it, but I guarantee you it's at least Wi-Fi 6.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Can't wait to experience that next time I go to San Diego, buddy, because I was not impressed.
Yeah, that old terminal's dust.
Oh, dude.
I already leveled it.
That's amazing. Congratulations on that. Hey, let's go to my second topic. I'm going to continue to talk about mobility as well. And I want to talk about NTT Docomo. And in November, I had another opportunity to go to Tokyo and attend NTT's R&D forum. And then I got to spend a day with Docomo. And we got to see some of the same demos that I saw the year before. But what I learned was that they've been demonstrating something around sensing technology. And this is something I think you and I have talked about on prior podcasts. They presented, at least to our group, that sensing technology as part of their future 6G stack, if you want to call it that. And they're calling it like a human augmentation platform with radio sensing. And so let me just provide some of the high-level points here. They've worked with some academia to develop this, but they're calling it field tech. And what's really cool is that over a very low latency, high throughput network, you can actually manipulate robotics. But what's really cool, there's also a haptic capability to it, where I participated in this demo where someone moved something and it made me twitch the hand that was wearing the sensor. And it gets you thinking, like, obviously there's some medical applications for this. There's some physical therapy applications for this, but it's quite interesting. And I don't want to go into all the details because it gets pretty technical, but you heard it first here on our last podcast, unfortunately, that's how NTT Docomo is going to somewhat differentiate what they're doing from a 6G perspective. You and I have talked about what other carriers and operators are thinking about. There's a lot of AI-infused capabilities in the RAN and the core infrastructure that I think we'll see with 6G. It'll be interesting to see what the spectrum profiles look like for 6G, but I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you spent any time with Docomo and know anything about this field tech, but what do you think? Could there be some pretty cool applications from your perspective?
Yeah, the way I look at it is the networks are already going to be sensing on their own.
Yeah.
And being able to sense other objects and people and things, I think that makes sense if the network is even lower latency, because it's basically impossible without super low latency. But I also think it would be really interesting if that sense capability flows through some kind of AI that determines which sensory outputs or inputs you should be feeling or be aware of, because there's probably going to be lots of inputs and it's going to be important to be able to understand which ones are relevant. Yeah. So I think that will be interesting, but I'm also cautious, because they really tried to pitch robotics for 5G, specific robotic surgery.
They did.
And that never panned out. So I think it's also important to understand what things are realistic and what things will actually get taken advantage of. And I still think we haven't even scratched the surface with 5G, but I think unfortunately a lot of those use cases will probably roll into 6G, even though they're very technically feasible in 5G.
Yeah. And initially when I was exposed to this technology through Docomo, they were positioning it within their 5G stack, but now it's decidedly it's going to be a part of what they do with 6G. And it's smart because it gives them a level of differentiation that's not exactly like everyone else. Interesting stuff. But hey, let's move to your second topic. And I know that you got to spend some time with T-Mobile and you were in Las Vegas for the F1 Grand Prix, correct? And you want to share some of your experiences from that.
Yeah, I actually have a write-up that's publishing pretty soon. And it talks about, one, T-Mobile's expanded partnership with Formula One. They're going to be the infrastructure provider in Las Vegas and in Austin. Mm-hmm. I think you and I talked about on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's going to be huge for COTA because that place is a nightmare. Yes. And it seems like the only infrastructure improvements they've made were for private 5G deployments for commercial uses, not for consumers or broadcasts. So that'll be huge, especially with Apple moving to take over the entire Formula One license. They're probably going to want to shoot 4K everything, and that's going to require a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah.
So I think T-Mobile doing that will be great. In addition to that, T-Mobile has a huge area of the Las Vegas Grand Prix that's basically their zone right around the Sphere. And they're doing lots of cool activations. They had a 5G concert there where the people on stage were performing and they had people walk around with smartphones that were basically live cameras feeding straight into the video on stage. So it's like a fan cam for a concert, which was cool. They also had some drones using 5G, but also just like enabling the teams to be capable, and then also broadcast cameras. They're really taking advantage of what they can do with 5G to improve the fan experience, but also the broadcast, which I think is good for people. And there was a lot of allusion to XR and AR, and it sounds like they want to potentially enable that both for people at home and people who are there. And I will tell you, I brought my Meta Ray-Ban display glasses with me, and while I did get some photos and video, and I heard something's too loud for that, there are multiple times where like true AR glasses would have actually been incredible here, because you can see where the cars are on the track while you're at the track, right? Who wouldn't want that? At least a fan that cares. But in addition to that, there was a lot going on. They talked about the whole Un-carrier move and how they're going to make it easier for people to switch. Since that announcement, TNT has pushed back, saying that T-Mobile is violating their terms of service. So that's going to be a battle that occurs. But ultimately, this is one of those things where it's a real pain point for consumers of any carrier. And being able to reduce that friction is a net positive for the industry. It may be a net negative for T-Mobile's competitors, but people will start to have an expectation that switching should be easier and faster, and it will push Verizon and AT&T to catch up. And that's ultimately what I think matters. And in addition to that, to enable that feature and that capability of their new service, they're also allowing people to have their phones delivered via DoorDash, which is an expansion of T-Mobile's partnership with DoorDash, where they offer free DoorDash memberships to their customers. T-Mobile is doing a lot to reinvigorate the whole Un-carrier move because they're getting a little bit stale. If you ask me, I think the most compelling Un-carrier was probably the satellite connectivity, and that was a couple years ago now. Obviously, it took them a while to roll it out, but the announcement at least. I think this Un-carrier move is much more compelling, and it fits more into the ethos of changing the way the cellular industry works, which was, I think, how Un-carrier was originally supposed to be. And yeah, I think T-Mobile kind of deepening its partnership with F1 and the Las Vegas Grand Prix is big because it's a growing sport in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Popularity is growing, and that's just like a great marketing opportunity. But also it's a great way to grow with the sport and to continue to be relevant. And they have perks for T-Mobile customers. They have a whole Magenta lounge people can use, and they have free battery banks you can borrow for the day. So it's a pretty good experience, and I'll say that they did a good job so far. And I think it's only going to continue to grow with Apple kind of being the exclusive partner.
Yeah, I like what T-Mobile is doing from a sports activation perspective. We've talked about MLB as well, right? Because you and I are big baseball fans. And going back to that switching tool, I understand that AT&T's concern was that they were scraping customer data without opt-in. And I believe that for AT&T customers, T-Mobile deactivated that auto scrape capability. I believe it's still activated for Verizon customers. But I do what T-Mobile's doing. They're being aggressive. They're recognizing, to your point, the friction that's associated from moving from carrier to carrier. It's gotten better over the years, but it's still, there's still a lot of friction there. Yeah. So I agree with you. Like, they're leaning back into their own carrier routes, and I like it. So good stuff. But hey, let me hit my third and final topic. I want to talk about Nokia. And we haven't done a podcast in a while. There's been a lot going on, a lot of travel between you and I, and just a lot of work in general. But this was back in November. It was right before Thanksgiving. And obviously, Nokia's under new leadership. They announced that they're splitting its business into two. No surprise, they're betting really big on AI with the partnership with NVIDIA and the $1 billion that's being plowed into that. But what's really puzzling is that they are basically parking their whole focus on private enterprise cellular networking. And that's really interesting. For years, you and I have been talking about this. It's been a slow tail from an adoption perspective. But when you looked at Nokia relative to Ericsson, and there are other players there, you could argue that they've been the most successful if you look at number of customers, number of wins, that sort of thing. And so it's really puzzling that just, I'm not going to say just now, this year we've seen really the momentum shift and with the adoption of private cellular networking. And now Nokia is going to park it. And I just find that really interesting. I think a lot of other analysts find it interesting and a little puzzling. What is your take on all that?
I find it equally puzzling, but I would say that it also may be a factor in, they have a new CEO in Justin Hotard, right?
Yeah.
It seems like they're trying to go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I think private 5G is just too slow for what they're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. I think private 5G to me feels like something that would be much more, you would give someone like a Siemens to deploy, right? 10-year contracts.
Or an NTT. You know,
Somebody who has the ability to stick with it and service the customer and ensure like a solid bring up. And it just seems like this is another knock on Nokia's constant changes, right?
Yeah.
I think one of Nokia's biggest weaknesses is that they're constantly changing, and whether it's for good or for bad. And it's not great in the business world because people want dependability.
Stability.
They want stability and dependability. I think that's probably the biggest mistake I think they're making here, is that they're just not engendering much confidence in their future if they are dropping one of the businesses that have been successful for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a very bright point for them. You could also argue what they've been doing with their autonomous networks platform, something that I've been involved in with Nokia, has been successful. But you're right. I think there's a perception that at a corporate level, they're going guardrail to guardrail. So if you remember at a couple of MWCs ago, when Pekka, the CEO at the time, was at the helm, there was this whole new rebrand and all this excitement around that. And then a couple of years later, we're found. And also, with that rebrand, it was a declarative that they were serious about enterprise. But the challenge has been for Nokia, their route to market into enterprise is not as strong as, say, a Cisco or an HPE, Aruba, now with Juniper, that has Athonet 5G core and they're doing private 5G. So the route to market's been a little more difficult for them. And there's significant expense and there's significant friction that goes along with that. I'm not counting them out, but I agree with you. This guardrail to guardrail, at least at the corporate level, it really makes a lot of people wonder, is there going to be staying power here? So it'll be interesting to see. And Justin's still fairly new in the role. Big announcements with NVIDIA. Everyone's betting big on agentic and generative AI and physical AI and, you know, how that's all going to progress. But it's been
I was going to say, you mentioned HPE. It's not one of our topics, but I wanted to call out that they sold their telco unit to HCL Tech. That was a $160 million deal. That was another surprising thing. I wasn't expecting HP to just unload their whole telco business.
So that was the group that CTG that was focused on carrier. And so they had divested some assets. And so that they were looking for a buyer for that for quite some time. So now they're focused on enterprise and private cellular within the enterprise. But that's interesting news. Thanks for bringing that up, man. Hey, let's hit your third and final topic. And we're going to close it out with Verizon. And you want to talk about what they're doing for with an enterprise class FWA solution.
Yeah, so they are deploying another network slice in addition to the ones that they've already announced. And this one is Enhanced Internet, which is specifically targeted towards enterprise customers, which it considers as large corporations with 500 or more employees. And this will leverage some of the new C-band spectrum, but they are not saying how much of the spectrum they're dedicating to this. And Verizon has a pretty big fixed wireless business. They were actually one of the first ones to deploy with millimeter wave initially. And they're saying that they're going to offer, that this offering will have 200 megabits down and 45 megabits up with prioritized access during instances of network congestion. We have deprioritization for prepay and cheap lines, and then we have prioritization for the customers who pay for the slice. And this is something that I think they want to offer. I'm really curious to see how they're going to actually offer it to enterprises, but they're talking about media, construction, and healthcare as being target markets. So I could see definitely for broadcasting that could be useful to guarantee a certain level of coverage and SLAs, actual SLAs for FWA. And then on top of that, there could be use for backups or for mobile healthcare applications. So I think there's definitely some opportunities there, but it sounds like it's more of an offering for people who are already Verizon customers, just another business connection that they can offer to these people because their pre-existing, not enhanced network slice for 5G business internet offered speeds of 8 megabits to 30 megabits, depending on tier and other factors. This is a much more enhanced offering for FWA that I think actually feels a lot more compelling in terms of speeds, but no word on price.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm wondering, as you talk through that, it made me think about like edge AI use cases as well, because you're going to need quality of QoS for that side of application. But yeah, and I know we opened the podcast with my sort of dogging Verizon on these price cuts, but then on the flip side for enterprise, they're doing something that's a little more innovative. I don't know, maybe their new CEO has got this push-pull plan going on to win back consumers
and enterprises.
And continue to service their enterprise customers, which have been some of their bread and butter for quite some time, but good stuff. Hey, buddy. It's bittersweet, man. We've been doing this for 5.5 years, almost 6 years now. And I just want to thank you. It's been a lot of fun doing this with you. I'm not going away. We're going to see each other at events and that sort of thing. But I just really want you to know like how much I've enjoyed working with you over the years and how much I've enjoyed doing this podcast with you. So thanks for the opportunity. And who knows, there may be something new that we can do together in the new year. We'll just have to wait and see.
Appreciate it, Will. It's been a long journey of making these podcasts work with our schedules and random things getting in the way or acts of God.
Babies, you're a father, you're twice over now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, awesome.
I've had two kids over the period of this podcast.
I know, man. So we've lived through a lot together, but this was a great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Yeah, and I'll say that I'm not sure I'm going to let this podcast die on its own.
All right.
I will try and revive it as something maybe new and interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe some 6G focus.
There you go.
So that's the plan right now.
Cool.
But nothing too concrete because I refuse to let this die.
I know. We've both invested a lot in it and I hope to see it continue.
Almost 250 episodes.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. And I'm actually talking to someone about doing something in the new year that's telco related as well. I don't want to compete with you, but yeah, keep it going, my friend. Keep it going.
Thanks a lot. And thanks a lot to our listeners. We hope you have a great weekend and we'll be back hopefully soon with some more updates on what's next for both of us. Thanks a lot.
Happy holidays.